Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
So are all our listeners over the fetal position, over sitting in a corner, thumb in mouth, with a big giant bottle of Jack Daniels in their hand, you know, over this Terps loss to West Virginia yet?
I don't believe so. Actually, come to think of it, I think more people are mad about Coach Huggins' daughter on Twitter calling Des Wells some pretty irreprehensible things on, you know, social media.
Yeah, it's all of a sudden as if the loss to West Virginia is no longer a story so much as it is Bob Huggins' daughters with their little bit of loose Twitter accounts, so to speak.
Yeah, and not to mention, you know, some of the Twitter, I won't pretty much go into detail, but pretty much calling Des Wells a rapist. And, of course, some people would call that, well, throwing salt on the wound. I wouldn't call it throwing salt on the wound. That would pretty much be the losing team exiting through the entranceway and a fan throwing a full bottle of soda at the player as they're leaving. That's what I call that right there. That's just, yeah.
I don't know. Jeering is a part of sports. And whenever you find something to use as artillery for a weakness, I mean, Josh Hamilton had to put up with it all the time as a, you know, in the right field because there were people making fun of his drugs and alcohol problems. You know, it's just when you become that high profile in the news, and don't think that Maryland fans are immune to it as well. Don't think that they're also, you know, high and mighty and on their pedestal. No, they do it too.
No, well, here's the thing. No fans are put on a pedestal at all. No fans have decorum in a way. But actually, according to reports, Huggins' daughter is actually a representative of West Virginia. So,
ooh.
Yeah. And you would happen to think, too, is that fans do not have a responsibility to apologize for their actions. They never have and they never will. For example, Ben Roethlisberger, even though he was accused twice of sexual assault, the guy will always be deemed a, quote, rapist in Baltimore by the fan base. And that's the thing. The fan base is not going to get collective as a unit, go to town hall and apologize for their actions. It doesn't work that way in sports. People keep their emotions in check, especially in a game like the round of 32 matchup against West Virginia, where West Virginia just had a better team than Maryland that night on Sunday night. And
very aggressive, too, by the way.
Very aggressive. And it's not so much that, but it's not like the responsibility that a one Bernard Pierce would have had in keeping his alcoholic level in check on St. Patrick's Day morning.
Wait. Have we done a show since that happened?
No, we haven't.
Okay,
no. St. Patrick's Day
was... So maybe we'll delve into that a little bit and talk...
Let's delve into it right now. Okay, I just want to say something real quick. All right, you are on your final year of your contract for the Baltimore Ravens. Justin Forsett got signed to a 3-year deal, and you respond not by getting in the gym and making yourself better, but by getting so plastered on St. Patrick's Day that you drive under the influence and pass out a few times on a park bench as police approach you. No wonder you got released shortly thereafter by the team. And not to mention his comments he made after he was picked up through waivers by the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, this was God's plan the whole time. I wouldn't call it God's plan or God's will. It seems like he's punishing you by getting signed by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Okay, I'll tell you this right now. You're an ordained minister, correct? In real life, outside of the podcast?
Licensed to do weddings in the home state that I live in. Let's just leave it at that, okay?
Okay, all right, we'll leave that. I'll say this right now. If Bernard Pierce follows this journey and becomes a benefactor in the Jaguars' success this year, which I don't see the Jacksonville Jaguars having a successful 2015 season, but then again, that's just my opinion. If he contributes to their success, Ray, I will bring in a piece of apple pie, and you are going to you're going to officiate the ceremony between me and that said pie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
No?
I wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't do that? Not for entertainment purposes?
Well, okay. Put $1 million in front of my face, and I'll do that.
Does Monopoly money count?
No. Ugh. It does not count whatsoever when I can just walk into a Walmart and pay $2 for a Monopoly set and get a whole $1 million in Monopoly money that way. I can pay money for fake money. Pay real-world money for fake world money. Isn't that what they do on video games and cell phones nowadays?
I mean, pretty
much. People are buying fake money with real money.
Who was on the $1,000 bill? That was Woodrow Wilson, right? He was on the $1,000 bill.
Who was on the $1 trillion bill?
It wasn't Taft, was it?
No, Harry S. Truman. The $1 trillion bill only exists in Simpsons lore for right now.
We should just get that printed and create both sides of it, and boom, I'll just lay it on the table right there for you.
I got you. Well, anyway, yes, this is the third player in the offseason so far for the Ravens that's been arrested, and all three of them have been released. One of them, though, I might add, was Terrence Cody, who was on the way out the door anyway. And just seeing the whole animal abuse case that was developing, they're like, yeah, we want no part of this for a player we have absolutely no interest in keeping. Bye, Felicia.
Yeah, and it's pretty weird that they take this cautious route of releasing anybody that gets into any sort of authority trouble outside of the football field.
Well, anybody low profile.
Yeah, they're
remember, like, they initially stood by Ray Rice. It was only after all the backlash that came through in the second video that came out that they eventually did release him.
You know, our guy, Lawrence guy, signed a 2-year deal with the Baltimore Ravens to come back for at least 2 more seasons. Imagine if he gets a parking ticket. You think he'll get cut next?
Yeah. Well, I've seen
that would be one of the greatest headlines ever.
Well, I've seen World Wrestling Entertainment fire somebody just because they made a mistake at a Walmart self-checkout.
Yeah, but then they got re-signed later.
Yeah, but being buried on the roster, essentially.
Yeah, and yeah, we will be talking professional wrestling on this show. Well, more towards the end of this show, but
you always save it towards the end of the show. You don't want to begin the show with that exactly. We were talking about Bernard Pearson, Ravens players being arrested. Talk about Terps and everything that was going on this past weekend. Lady Terps still in the tournament.
Sweet 16.
Orioles spring training winning streak they had snapped.
Yep, and at least they are not the worst team in the Grapefruit League anymore.
No, they are not.
That is the Detroit Tigers now.
But Bud Norris is still the worst pitcher in the Grapefruit League.
Well, him and Ubaldo Jimenez. By the way, Jimenez has a victory.
How about that?
Ugh.
You know, he had victories last season, too, it actually counted.
It's not looking good, Ray. It's not looking good for your boy.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
You don't put stock in spring training stats, Josh. You might just be working on control, and as he's doing that, he's just putting, you know, meatballs out there that people can hit.
Well, if we're talking stocks, wouldn't Bud Norris sort of be like the Furby of 1997, a toy that hit its peak during that year and then all of a sudden just went on the downslide?
I didn't even know it was in 1997. I always thought Furbies were like early 2000s.
No, I thought they were like 96, 97, right around.
You know the exact specific of when the Furby peaked.
Right around there, yeah. You know how I know? Sisters, Ray. Sisters.
I had sisters who had Furbies, but you know what? I still don't remember. I even was like trying to get them to fart all the time. All
right, before we forget to remember what we're talking about, what is the name of this show, Ray?
It is the Baltimore Sports Free for All.
Which you can find on
SFMSports.net, Audio Boom, Spreaker.
And Stitcher. Don't forget that, too.
Stitcher as well.
Yep. And our Facebook page.
The Baltimore Sports Free for All Podcast.
And if you want to hashtag trend and go on Twitter.
@BSportsFree, #4, all.
And my blog.
Sunday Night Sports Delight.
Yep. And also, we're going to be announcing a few things on the show as we go along. One of the first things we'll announce, the Sunday Night Sports Delight, in the next coming weeks, will be featuring the return of the American League East Week in Review. Yep, you can go on Blogger. You'll see that it's called the Sunday Night Sports Delight, but it will still have the American League East Week in Review.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Yep, it's not going to be biased or anything like that. Trust me, we're going to be fair in this whole article here.
I would hope so, considering that a lot of times you do come off a little bit
homerish,
homey, so to speak.
I like to be the friend. I like to be Mr. Rogers. You know, I like to wear the cardigan and just welcome everybody into my neighborhood. And, you know,
I would say that your Maryland Terrapin cardigan that you're currently wearing with your purple Beats by Dre headphones.
Well, no, it's a T-shirt.
All you need now is an orange and black hat, and you've completed
and orange shoes.
You do have orange and black on. He's completed the ensemble, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my goodness!
We
gracious.
Should take a picture of this and put it on the B Sports Free #4 all. Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see if we get some traction out of that.
Yeah, but speaking of traction, though, the traction has stopped for the Maryland men's basketball team. And I'll tell you what, despite the fact they didn't make a trip to the Sweet 16 in the for the first time in nearly 12 years, what an exciting run for this team that nobody expected to even do anything in their inaugural season in the Big Ten, Ray.
They're going to get their ass kicked in the Big Ten, comes to mind. Yeah, those people.
Well, they didn't get their ass kicked, you know, in the Big Ten, but they did sort of get their ass kicked by a Big 12 team, if we're talking big teams in the spectrum of college sports here.
I will ask the question, though, about what if Mello Tremble didn't take that no foul call of a hard screen? What if Mello Tremble didn't try to jump for the ball and land awkwardly on his knee and then get kicked in the back of the head accidentally by Damonte Dodd? What if all of that didn't happen? I think they still lose that game because Dez Wells was a turnover machine in that game, and they had 25 turnovers themselves as a team, Wells contributing 8 towards that number. It was quite the bloodbath for West Virginia. They just played hardcore defense. They were on these guys like white on rice, and they were just, you know, out physicaling these guys. What kind of a word is that? How about this? They just outperformed Maryland in the physical range of motion in terms of that saying right there. How about that for a little bit of a save? You can put it in the books right there. I'm saying it right there. West Virginia just looked like a stronger team than what Maryland was on Sunday night, and it proved to be that way in the scoreboards. I don't think Mello Tremble coming in at the end of the game, if he was physically able to or not, I don't think that would have made that much of a difference. Maybe they would have kept it a little close, but to me, from the start of the game, West Virginia was just a better team, and I could actually see them kind of putting up a fight against Kentucky.
Could you imagine what it would have been like if, say, Valparaiso on Friday night in the opening round against Maryland was more of a pressing defense in that sort of fashion? And they seemed like that. Let's start with the opening round, Ray. Let's at least mention that the Terps men got a win before we close out their season completely on
the
show.
Let's mention that they faced a team that up until last week I did not know how to pronounce, and the only way I could look up how to pronounce their actual team name as opposed to Valpo, which anybody can get off the drop of a hat, is I had to YouTube and find in the depths of YouTube a highlight clip of a game to where the commentator waited until the very, very end of the video to finally say the actual name of the school as Valparaiso.
Which ended up being on your 2-minute rants that following show.
Yeah, because I just came up with off the whim. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm kind of ticked off about this. If you're Valparaiso and you're trying to get people to come to your school, the first thing you need to know is if they can pronounce it or not. And, you know, you're playing against Maryland, a team that comes in with a little bit of newsworthiness because of their move from the ACC to the Big Ten, their success in the Big Ten, and their ability to get back to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 5 years, trying to make a bid for the Sweet 16 for the first time in 12 years. You have that kind of a combination going up against Maryland, and we can't figure out how to pronounce your name through normal methods.
And looking at the statistics of that game, that if you look at the final score, it looked a lot closer than it should have been. Maryland 65, Valparaiso 62, and Valparaiso had the final possession of the game, where it looked like, you know, beforehand they were just doing very well with 3-point attempts. By the way, Valparaiso, their final statistic, 12 for 27 from the 3-point line. And the final play of the game, that Maryland defense stepped up when it needed to and looked like a fumble on Valparaiso's part right there. And you saw Evan Smotrich sort of kind of get near the ball like, oh, no, don't go out of bounds. Don't go out of bounds yet. Wait for the clock. Okay, we're good. We're good. All right, let's move on to the round of 32. But, yeah, you look at Maryland statistics overall against Valparaiso, they did get into some foul trouble there. You had Jake Lehman, who had 5 personal fouls, along with Damonte Dodd, who had 5 personal fouls. And you look at the Maryland bench, Jared Nickens, what a game he had. 4 for 7 from the 3-point range, which I think was key for Maryland. 14 points, and he had, let's see here, it was 2 for 2 from free throws. And like I said before, if you're perfect from the free throw range, that certainly does help, especially in big games like this. Now, unfortunately, we have to talk about the West Virginia game because we might as well just get it out of the way now, because the more it drags on, the uglier it's going to get. And yes, folks, we know it was a Sunday night. Not many of you wanted to go out and watch the game. You would rather stay at home, which would have been nice anyway.
And also, the Maryland and Virginia game had the unfortunate task of competing with The Walking Dead, which a lot of people were watching instead of the Maryland game. I was seeing people tweeting about The Walking Dead more than I was about the Maryland-West Virginia game, especially in this local area. And it just seemed like, hey, you know what? I think there was kind of a little bit of a comfort zone with Maryland fans by saying to themselves, oh, we don't have to watch the game. It's all good. They got this. No big deal. It's all good. West Virginia, that, meh. Nah, apparently, they were like, let's move on to Kentucky. Well, that didn't happen. A little bit of a reality check stepped in, and then all of a sudden you see the ones coming out saying, Mark Turgeon was out-coached. I told you they'd get their ass kicked in the Big Ten.
He wasn't out-coached. The game was perfect.
I'm just talking about the guys who want to sit on their armchairs, and they want to talk about the game and offer their critiques when I like to see them do a little bit of a better job.
Big Ten Coach of the Year.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, but looking at what happened in that game. Now, Ray, when I bring up the number 23, what comes to your mind first thing?
Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan. Okay. And when you think of Michael Jordan, you think, what, fundamental basketball, right?
Space Jam.
Really? Space Jam?
Yeah, I'm going to go throw that. I was thinking about...
I was going to say fundamentals in basketball, clutch.
I was trying to come up with a smart-ass answer to what you think about number 23, but I'm like, no, I can't think of anything else from 23 other than Michael Jordan.
23 total turnovers by the Maryland Terrapins offense.
Let's amend the stat that I said earlier. I thought it was 25. So 23 it is. But still, Des Wells contributed 8 of those 23 turnovers.
What a terrible way to end your tenure at the University of Maryland by turning over the ball 8 times. I mean, you figure what would be a worse statistic for a senior basketball player on his way out and most likely going to the NBA? Going 0-for-8 from the free throw line or having 8 turnovers? I think turning the ball over 8 times and having that big number contribute to the turnover total would hurt a lot more.
Maybe if you split those numbers and make him go 4-for-8 from the free throw line and maybe 6 turnovers, do you think that might be a better, you think that would have made a big of a difference?
I think so too. And also it didn't help matters that Mello Trimble was out in the second half of the game with a head injury. And by the way, that was a BS call by the referees. That should have been a foul on West Virginia when...
On Damonte Dodd? Because he's the one that gave him the head injury.
Well, no. There was a West Virginia player in that mix there.
I know. I'm just saying that there was another way where there was like a hard screen on the Mello Trimble, and everybody, even Doug Gottlieb, was saying that should have been a foul. I mean, where is the foul on that?
Yeah, and it's... When you take a player out of the game like that, you would happen to think that a hard personal foul would have been called against West Virginia in that play. But that just shows you how hard West Virginia played that entire game. And it also showed you how one-dimensional the University of Maryland Terrapins are. And not taking anything away from them, they had a very good year in their inaugural season in the Big Ten. No question about it. But when you see a team without a stud freshman like Mello Trimble, that certainly made a difference right there. And especially when you had guys like Evan Smotrich taking more shots than he really needed to. And by the way, Evan Smotrich, this was a very good stat, even though I sort of gave him crap on our last episode. 2-for-3 from the three-point line. I don't praise a player much for one ability, but if Evan Smotrich can perfect that next season, I think he can be the reliable guy that just can get on the outside and take three-point shots, and Maryland definitely needs a three-point shooter.
Yeah, Jake Lehman entering his senior year. You got Robert Carter Jr. coming in next year after having to sit out for a year. Mello Trimble, for all intents and purposes.
Don't forget Diamond Stone, 5-star center, choosing between Wisconsin and Maryland.
Yeah, and for all intents and purposes, Mello Trimble hasn't made any indications that he's going to the NBA, being a one-and-done player.
So are you saying on this show that you personally think 100% positive Mello Trimble is going to come back for his sophomore year?
Well, let me see. You get a nice little bit of a high-profile case in the news. You get a little bit of stock rising in the draft lottery. And you got guaranteed money coming your way when you get drafted in the NBA. Who would turn that down?
Well, I think no kid would turn that down, even if they were a freshman at Kentucky. I mean, and of course, that university has become famous for one-and-dones in the last several years under John Calipari.
Yeah, they don't rebuild, they reload. Yeah, how about that? Yeah, let's get the old unfairness of, you know, Kentucky being the team that you fight in Madden that has all the difficulty sliders turned down.
Okay, so you mentioned Jake Lehman possibly returning his senior year. You mentioned Robert Carter Jr. coming into the fold, very solid high school player coming into Maryland as a freshman. Now, let me do a fill in the blank scenario here. If Diamond Stone commits to Maryland and Melo Trimble comes back for his sophomore year, Maryland will finish blank. Think about that. Diamond Stone, Carter Jr., Lehman, Trimble.
Big Ten champions?
Really? Think so? Regular season or tournament?
Tournament.
Tournament. Okay. All right, let's do this. Diamond Stone commits, Melo Trimble goes to the NBA, Maryland finishes blank.
Semifinal Big Ten tournament.
Okay, so they'll still be a NCAA tournament team regardless.
Yes.
Okay.
It's just that Melo Trimble is their difference between being in the Sweet 16 and being knocked out in the round of 32 again.
All right, final scenario. Diamond Stone doesn't commit, Melo Trimble goes to the NBA, Maryland finishes blank.
Oh, my God! I don't want to think about that. Let me see. It's
I'll say fifth in the Big Ten, maybe semifinal Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, because they've pretty much shown that maybe one game they could win without Melo Trimble and Des Wells, but in terms of the big fries, not so much.
All right. So let's move on to the women who are still in their NCAA tournament, who are still the number one seed, as we have last read, in the Spokane region.
On Monday, they knocked off the juggernauts that was the Princeton University.
78-63, the Maryland Lady Terps defeated Princeton, ending Princeton's prolific Ivy League season and moving on to the Sweet 16 to face Duke. Now, let's go to...
I want to ask you a question, though, first.
Okay.
Didn't Cecil Terwilliger go to Princeton?
Is that a Simpsons character by any chance?
Sideshow Bob's brother.
Wasn't he voiced by, what's his face from, Frasier?
David Hyde Pierce,
yep.
Yeah.
That was a nice little, casting right there.
And they even like, played, like, a little bit of a Frasier, like, bumper in that episode where, Bob was actually the good guy. He had a face turn, and his brother had the eventual heel turn in the middle of the episode.
Yep, teasing more pro wrestling references on this show for
upcoming. Hey, why not? I'm in the mood. It's WrestleMania season, after all.
Exactly.
It's the one time a year where people probably outside of the regular WWE fan base actually do care about that. What is that?
We just got a new follower on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
we get an actual confirmation of that on the air on the Baltimore Sports Free For All, that you actually get a nice little tone for when, hey, we got a new follower, new subscriber. What is this, Twitch?
The volume is down, Ray. Okay, the volume is down.
But is the vibration off? Because you've got it on the table right now.
The vibration is off, Ray.
Yeah,
it's
because,
off.
You know, even though I've got shock mounts on these microphones, people can still hear the actual vibration itself rubbing up against right. The table.
Even though it is WrestleMania season, it is still March Madness season, and the Lady Terrapins are finding themselves in a Sweet 16 matchup against Duke. We'll check the date on that in just a little bit. But looking at the stats from their recent game, their recent round of 32 game against the Princeton Tigers, let's look here. The guard, Lauren Mincy, had 27 points, Ray, 7 assists, 4 rebounds, and was just solid in defense right there. And also, Lexi Brown, another guard player for the Lady Terps, 23 points, 4 assists, 6 rebounds. But then again, she had 6 turnovers, but... if you can put up 23 points and keep yourself out of foul trouble, I guess that is more forgivable by Brenda Fries and company right there.
Yes, I would say forgivable. The results are what counts, and everybody who follows women's basketball, they put into the stats. But when you're a casual fan that says, oh, Maryland's in the Sweet 16 of the tournament, okay, I'll watch a few games here and there. You know, they're looking at the actual result more than they are the stats. It's an unfortunate reality when it comes to college basketball on the women's side.
Yep, and center Brianna Jones with a double-double. She had 10 points and 10 rebounds. 6 of those 10 rebounds were offensive rebounds. And just getting back to men's for a second, yes, West Virginia was famous for the turnovers there, but they were also famous for the offensive rebounds. I never seen that many offensive rebounds in a game in my life right there. But the Lady Terrapins seem to have mastered that in the rebound game. Maybe not so much defense, but when you can get offensive rebounds and get those second and third chances, your point total is going to go up, and it's certainly going to help your cause and moving on to the Sweet 16. which we will go to right at this moment here. The Maryland women will be facing the fourth-seeded Duke Lady Blue Devils. Or we just call them Lady Blue Devils or Blue Lady Devils or what do we call them? Just
the She-Devils?
She-Devils. That sounds about right. And looking at their record, 22-10, 11-5 in the ACC this year, I think it's pretty safe to say this on paper looks like a cakewalk for the Lady Terps, don't you think?
You would think, considering that Maryland just swept the Big Ten and how they got to go through some of these guys to get to the actual Final Four. And
they
then
barely survived 13-seeded Albany, though, the Duke Blue Devils did, 54-52 in their round of 32 game.
Huh. Well, I'm just thinking that maybe Maryland can ride a little comfortably. But I mean, don't take the foot off the gas by any means. You got to ride comfortably because you're that good. Don't forget that talent that you have. Use that talent. And I think that, you can kind of rest a little easy until you get to the Final Four, so to speak.
Yep, and as we move on to the Final Four, and hopefully by our next episode, we will be talking Ladies Final Four, maybe a dream matchup against one of the top four, top five teams in the country. I guess we'll find out until our next episode.
That we will, and eventually until the next episode happens, Maryland women's fate is in the hands of the basketball gods.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Baltimore Orioles are a solid 8-13 in spring training, Ray, in the Grapefruit League, only 4.5 games back.
But it was such a shame, though, because they just had their 4-game winning streak snapped, and it looks like bad times are ahead for the Orioles Grapefruit squad.
Dun, dun, dun! No, I'm just kidding.
Opening day is a couple weeks away, and everybody's looking
so
forward
excited.
To that. And, everybody's making the big light about, Chris Davis, he's got to sit out opening day. No, he gets to sit out opening day away. When it comes to Camden Yards, he's still going to be introduced with the team and be able to play on the field, barring a disaster like he gets hurt on the second game. The first at bat he has coming back from his Adderall suspension this year, this is a whole redemption story, and he swings the bat wrong and pulls something. Ah, darn it, disabled list for you. That's happening to Matt Wieters right now.
Yep, and prized pitching prospect Hunter Harvey. But let's start with Matt Wieters. Wieters will be starting the regular season on the 15-day disabled list with tendonitis issues, which is sort of resulted from his Tommy John surgery recovery.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's put it this way and maybe, throw a little bit of glasses half full in the scenario.
Are we really going with the glasses half full scenario here?
It's only the 15-day and not the 60-day. I mean, there's that he was on. So,
and you also had the 0-23 this spring, too, which certainly didn't show any promise.
Oh, he was working on a swing. Don't worry about that too much. Okay, never mind. This is just about with Matt Wieters. Contract year. You got to step up, buddy, as soon as you get back from injury and not show that you're injury prone. You don't want a esteemed Baltimore news journalist asking you if you're injury prone, saying you're not injury prone, next day out for the season. You don't want to go down that road, Matt Wieters. You have a former teammate that's done that, and still on the spring training squad, ironically, Nolan Reimolds.
Yeah, and looking at former prospects such as Nolan Reimold, yes, at one time he was a former prospect for the Baltimore Orioles.
Hey, people are really legitimately excited about Nolan Reimold and the way that he was performing for the Orioles, and then all of a sudden,
yeah, years ago,
gone.
Yeah, but moving on to our prospect currently on the Orioles roster, 40-man roster, what have you, Hunter Harvey, the 20-year-old right-handed pitching prospect for the Baltimore Orioles, will miss 4 to 6 weeks of season play due to a right fibula fracture.
Ouch.
Yeah, so
See that right there is doom and gloom because he's got to still recover from that injury.
You know what we call that, Ray? Best worst case scenario, especially for a young pitcher, because the one words you don't want to hear with a young pitcher are Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
Those are three dreaded words you do not want to hear because that happened to Dylan Bundy, and now he's trying to get back on track and revive his major league career.
It also happened to Steven Strasburg. He turned out okay so far.
Yeah, and at least he's not being limited in pitching anymore.
I mean, it's no longer the death sentence that it used to be, but when you see the Tommy John surgery, you just remember, this is just going to delay your push to being the next big guy. so to speak. And with Hunter Harvey, for a minute there, I thought you were going to say Hunter Hearst Helmsley, by the way.
Here we go again with the wrestling reference. But,
okay, guys, that's what Triple H stands for. Yeah. People don't remember that too much, but anyway.
It's Hunter Luke Harvey. That's his full name.
So it's HLH?
HLH.
HLH. Yeah. That sounds like a fraternity.
Yeah, it almost does there. But yeah, Tommy John surgery isn't so much the death sentence anymore as it used to be. The medical science has improved with it tremendously. It hasn't resulted in, you know, such Oriole players like Pat Henkin and Scott Erickson, who had Tommy John surgery, each of them had, and were not able to recover the greatness or the abilities that they used to have.
Pat Henkin. Pat Hankton. That's a name I haven't heard in forever.
Henkin
or whatever
it
is.
Former Cy Young Award winner for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yep, and then the Orioles get him, and he's gone. Oh, yep. Yeah. That's so much for that. It was to the point where Orioles go there for their careers to die.
Scott Erickson, former All-Star pitcher with the Minnesota Twins, signs with the Orioles, gets Tommy John surgery, and yeah.
Oh, he had a few good years for the Orioles.
Few good years.
I'd actually rate him behind Mike Mussina as the legitimate number two that they had for the Orioles.
Didn't he used to be married to Lisa Guerrero from the Best Damn Sports Show period?
I want to say yes.
I think so. I think that is accurate right there.
All
right.
Well, anyway, while Josh Hall researches this, or Josh Hall being me, Ray Atkinson, Lisa Guerrero of the Best Damn Sports Show period, whatever happened to that show? I forgot.
It went off the air. I mean, once a network sort of formed off. I mean, it did used to be on Comcast Sportsnet at the time, but
yeah,
Comcast Sportsnet is sort of evolving into NBC Sports Network and everything else branching off. And good for them. They should do that. I mean,
yeah, they were married. Lisa Guerrero and Scott Erickson were definitely married at one point.
Now, she's not the one that beat him up with the shoe. That was another pitcher from the American League Central. That was Chuck Finley. Chuck Finley was that guy. Tony Kitaen. Tony Kitaen beat him up with the shoe.
Anyway, what is Lisa Guerrero doing right now?
I think she's just living life comfortably out in the West Coast. Probably.
No, she's hosting a reality show on Velocity. Yeah. That's where, you know, all these guys, you say, whatever happened to those people? Oh, they're on Velocity. Oh, they're on True TV. Oh, they're on, what's the other one that TNA went to, Destination America?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And at least Lisa Guerrero is not one of the celebrities that appears on one of those funny comedy skits and makes fun of things that happened in the past, like I Love the 80s or some show like that. But
yeah, those types of reality shows, when you're on those right now, you can officially say that your time in the spotlight, the golden age of your career, is over. And that happened to what, Danny Bonaducci, Ron Jeremy,
yeah,
even Hal Sparks to a point. I mean, you thought that guy was gonna make something of himself, and nope, he goes on the 80s show, made a career out of that. And actually turned out to be kind of a funny bright spot on VH1. But then what else? Surreal Life, Vanilla Ice. Mm-hmm. When you're on the Surreal Life, you can honestly say that your career's done.
Well, moving from the golden years to a golden year in spring training for one left fielder, Steve Pierce, who is currently leading the Orioles with home runs, with four home runs in exhibition play, a solid .355 batting average. Still no walks yet for Steve Pierce, but not as many strikeouts. Only one strikeout and 31 at-bats so far. And that is a number I like to see with hitters, is lowering the strikeout to walk ratio. When you can lower your ratio to 3-1 or maybe 2-1 or 4-2, that helps your team out more than anything, and Steve Pierce is certainly earning his stripes. May start out in the outfield on opening day, Ray, with the way things are going right now.
Yeah, you know, that's it's nice to see some Pierce having success in Baltimore, unlike Bernard Pierce.
You know, it's not the same name spelled, though.
No, it really isn't, but it sounds the same, Josh. And, you know, to people, that's all that counts. I mean, come on. Jerry Sandusky and Jerry Sandusky have different spellings of their names, but people sometimes confuse them with the same person.
I actually felt bad for our Jerry Sandusky when he was going through that little ordeal.
How could you not?
Absolutely. It was just terrible. But still got support and people wised up, which they should have in the first place.
Well, he still kind of gets it once in a while.
That's terrible.
But ultimately, he had the best quote about it whatsoever. I'm inconvenienced. I'm not a victim.
Yep, absolutely. But Chris Davis, as we're talking Orioles hitters here, batting average is .219, but his on-base is .316, which is a solid sign for the first baseman coming off a disappointing 2014 season. Three home runs by Crush Davis, 10 RBIs, which is tied for the team lead with third baseman Jimmy Paredes, who is still sporting a solid batting average with .433, has 10 RBIs, one home run, still leads the team with three doubles. And we're looking at this team batting-wise, and also Adam Jones just came off a two-home run game, so he's sort of getting back into the mix of things. The Orioles hitters are sort of finding their way around in developing their swagger going into opening day, and that is promising considering the fact that there are a majority of guys who are left off of the Orioles batting order going into the postseason. Guys like Matt Wieters, guys like Chris Davis, guys like Manny Machado, who all have missed significant amount of time. Yes, we know Matt Wieters is going to miss 15 days to start the season. Whoop-de-doo. Yeah, he'll be back. Okay, he'll be back.
And hopefully in decent form then and shows what he had last year, because if he just comes back and continues to have regular stints on the DL, this has got to be it for Matt Wieters in terms of his stints on the disabled list, because if not, then he can say adios to that contract. He may even say adios to maybe his future here as a Baltimore Oriole if he can't turn around his Tommy John's recovery. Because on the bright side, another silver lining is that this is just a setback that he's had with recovering from an injury. He can still recover from that injury, though. And it's not like, you know, he has a broken fibula or anything like that, like one Hunter Harvey has, who is right now going in the beginning stages of his recovery process. Matt Wieters,
still very young too.
Matt Wieters is still very young, and he's on the tail end.
Well, Harvey's still very young.
Well,
Matt Wieters is
young still too.
Yeah,
he's only a couple
in baseball terms.
He's only a couple years older than I am. So I mean, I still consider that young. People would say I'm football old, like right in the prime of my career. No, I'm still a very, very young guy. I don't even have kids yet. I'm not even married.
You would be very young in golf right now.
Tremendously young in golf right now. I'm young in the broadcast world. I mean, have you seen ESPN? Have you seen all these local sports stations? They have all these old men on there, and
impromptu makeup sessions before they go on the air. Yep, we caught you. We caught you, Hannah Storm. Don't joke there.
Yeah, I mean, so you have it to where I'm young in the broadcasting industry. If I ever want to really, really get a job in local TV, you have to start out in Shikshinny, Pennsylvania. But in terms of Matt Wieters' recovery, he's just had a small setback with his recovery from Tommy John surgery. If he comes back from it and is healthy, then all the more power to the guy. But what really kind of hurts him in a way is that on the earlier parts of his career, I remember people criticizing the fact that with that height and the way that he, you know, plays catcher, he's not going to be able to, you know, maintain himself at catcher for very long. Although, ironically, it was his elbow that gave out, not his legs.
Yeah, exactly.
How tall the guy is.
Yeah, I mean, you figure with as big as he is and as much as he crouches as a catcher, which most catchers do as, you know, as the starting position in Major League Baseball, you figure Matt Wieters at
most catchers crouch? I'd say
all catchers crouch. Excuse me there. But, well, hey, not all catchers get playing time like Caleb Joseph, who, by the way, has to be, I guess, not so much vehemently, but just salivating at the opportunity to start out on opening day and to prove himself, maybe not so much as a starting catcher now, but to prove himself as a commodity for the Orioles offense.
If and when they move Matt Wieters to first base because he just can't play catcher anymore, because, like I said, that was just the criticism. Well,
so you say.
That was what a lot of people said, just as the criticism that they had for Matt Wieters coming out, because people were saying that he's the next coming of God, for God's sake. You know, he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. People were saying, wait a minute, this guy's not going to hold up as catcher with how tall he is. It's going to come to a point where he may have to just, you know, put the catcher's mitt up and put on a first base glove. That's all there is to it. And he could still be a contributor to the Baltimore Orioles. It'll just be in a different role.
By the way, we just got another Twitter follower, Simply Crushed Oriole fan. So there you go.
A Simply Crushed Oriole fan?
Well, no, Simply Crushed, who in their title is an Orioles fan, so. But moving on from hitters to pitchers, where it just seems like it's doom and gloom at this point with the pitching rotation, especially the starting rotation, we might as well get started with that there. You look at some of the starters who may end up being on the starting rotation come opening day. Let's start off with your boy, your best buddy in the whole wide world, Bud Norris, 0-3 with a 9.26 earned run average this spring. 9 strikeouts, but has 9 base on balls and has given up a .327 clip to opposing batters.
Hey, wait a minute here, Josh Hall. Wait just a second, okay? You're kind of piling on and trying to rub salt in my wound, kicking me while I am down. Over spring training stats.
Over spring training stats, yeah.
Okay, at least when I'm...
I got to have some kind of fun here with baseball season while it's still going
at
on.
At least I'm rubbing salt in the wound, and when I'm stomping on the throat of all the haters that were like, Maryland's going to get their ass kicked in the Big Ten, at least had some substance to stand on. You, yourself, you're going based off of spring training stats. When in reality, I do remember last year when you asked me who was a surprise all-star, I said Bud Norris because of, you know, don't sleep on this guy. You laughed in my face.
Yeah, and
I turned out not to be so wrong, didn't I?
No, you didn't. But we still have a 2015 season to look forward to see if.
But that was a 2014 season. You asked me that about.
Yeah, and Bud Norris will still have to put it behind him. He's going to have to put the spring behind him because let's face it, he's not going to have enough outings to redeem himself at this point.
Just like you have to put it behind you that yes, I called that as a surprise all-star last year, and you laughed at me.
Yeah, but who contributed more to the postseason, Bud Norris or Nick Markakis?
Well, anyway, you yeah. were saying, hey, I'm your boy, Bud Norris, your boy. He was my surprise all-star. That was it.
All right.
Okay? I don't shine Bud Norris's shoes. I don't drive his car. I don't say, hey, buddy, you drinking tonight? It's like, yeah, hey, I'll give you a ride. Unlike one Bernard Pierce who didn't do that.
Oh, man. But moving on from Bud Norris to Ubaldo Jimenez, Ubaldo, who has one more win than Bud Norris in spring training, 1-3. Okay, I'm done.
Shut up.
Okay, I'm done. But when we're looking at long relievers, just going from Bud Norris, who we know will be in the starting rotation come opening day, Ubaldo is sort of the odd man out at this point. Ubaldo Jimenez, TJ McFarland, and Tommy Hunter, their ERAs, as I read it down, 7.20 earned run average for Tommy Hunter. TJ McFarland has an 8 ERA. Ubaldo, 8.74 earned run average. I'll tell you what, Ray, I know we don't put much stock into spring training. Like I said, spring training we have to look at as reality television. Not all of it is real. Some of it is artificial.
Spring training isn't spring training.
Yeah, and you also look at the Cubs player, I think it was Bryant, who leads the league with 8 home runs. He might not even make it to opening day on the opening day roster.
Hey, the Baltimore Orioles have experience with that. His name is Jake Fox.
Yep, and look how that turned out right there.
Yeah, so like I said, you're boring me with the spring training stats. Call me when opening day starts, okay? I want to see how these guys do with their mechanics, how they work their way around and everything else that's happening. I remember what pitcher was it that called out somebody on Twitter about his stats? Somebody said that he gives up so many extra base hits, and he says, you know what though is the key though? 73 strikeouts, 0 walks. I'm not working on extra base hits at the time. I'm working on my command and not walking guys.
I think that wasn't Justin Verlander, was it?
No, it wasn't Justin Verlander. It was a pitcher, I believe, for the Tigers. Spring training.
Max Scherzer?
No, it wasn't. No, he's with the Nationals right now.
Yeah, the $200 million man right there for the Washington Nationals. And did you know that the Washington...
Trevor Bauer.
Oh, Trevor Bauer. Ah, okay. He was an AL Central pitcher, right? Yep, Detroit Tigers. Is that correct?
Oh, now you're having to actually click on the article instead of me just looking at the headline. Okay, fine. Trevor Bauer is with... let me see.
I bet you he's with nobody there, Ray.
He's with nobody. No. He is with somebody. He's with the Cleveland Indians.
Yep, I knew it was an AL Central team right there.
Yeah, it was definitely Central, but not the Detroit Tigers, as I initially thought. It was the Cleveland Indians. So, okay, sue me.
Okay, but the main headline, of course, of this week is the setback that the Orioles have on offense with Matt Wieters being out for 15 days of the regular season. How do you think this is going to turn out for the Baltimore Orioles? And keep in mind, folks, just because a player gets off on the 15-day disabled list doesn't mean they are automatically put into the lineup immediately after the disabled list is called off. They still have to do some recovery time as well. They still have to get back in the thick of things. They still have to take some reps. And they may sit on the bench for a few days. So it may be 20 days before we even see Matt Wieters suit up for the Orioles. Let me ask you this. How much does this affect the Orioles offensively and defensively going into 2015?
Well, considering that you're kind of banking on getting your core guys up to the standards that what Nelson Cruz and Nick Markakis had for you last year, and that's the argument that a lot of people make about how the Orioles' lack of offseason moves in free agency and everything else that they were doing, and Dan Duquette seemed like he was on his way to Toronto. It makes you wonder about that. Are the Baltimore Orioles in trouble to start off the season? And you can look at the way the Orioles started. I remember in 2011, they started out 4-0, And then what did they finish? Dead last? Oh, yeah. I remember that season. And you can't really put too much stock at the beginning of the season so much as Matt Wieters, Manny Machado, and Chris Davis. Those are the three guys that you're banking on to replace the productivity that Nelson Cruz and Nick Markakis gave you in the lineup. Those guys are the ones you want to replace the guys you lost this season.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Well, it's WrestleMania season here. Not only March Madness comes to pass with the NCAA, but March also signifies that the Super Bowl of, well, I guess you could call it the Super Bowl of professional wrestling, even though wrestling isn't wrestling if you watch that Max Landis video that went viral this past week on YouTube.
Part of my two-minute rant right there. But it is at Levi's Stadium, the Field of Jeans in San Francisco, California.
The Field of Jeans.
Yeah, that's...
And in the Field of, you know, peril for the San Francisco 49ers right now who have no idea what they're doing.
This is the most positive thing they have going on right now.
It's like, we're hosting WrestleMania. Can we break the Silver Dome's record? Don't know.
They're like, folks, do not pay attention to our news in the offseason. This is the big event going on right now. Check it out, okay?
Is Jim Harbaugh going to be in attendance?
No. I think Jon Stewart will be in attendance, though. He does have some beef with Seth Rollins, the Money in the Bank.
That he does. Yeah, Jon Stewart involved attracting some mainstream attention to the WWE, but Max Landis also doing his video. You had, I think, Wayne Brady was in that video as well.
I didn't see him. I did see Macaulay Culkin, Seth Green.
Yeah, Seth Green and Macaulay Culkin were in the
video. Haley Joel Osment.
And, yeah.
It's so weird seeing him as an adult now.
It really is. Wayne Brady was.
It's weird seeing Macaulay Culkin as an adult.
Well, I've gotten used to that image.
Yeah.
I've gotten used to that image over the years,
yeah,
but
true.
It's still Haley Joel Osment is I see dead people. Come on, man.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we'll talk about WrestleMania here as we did last year on the Baltimore Sports Free for All. Seemed to go over well with the fans. You see, I'm using wrestling terms now. But anyway, we'll talk about some of these matches that are going on the card right now. A lot of people are thinking that it's a little bit underwhelming, and maybe you could look at that and say, maybe compared to last year's Mania, maybe compared to The Rock versus John Cena, yeah. Because you're going with a guy that you think is the next big guy, going up against a big guy in Brock Lesnar right now as the main event. People were booing this guy at the Royal Rumble because they didn't get what they wanted again, and therefore wanted to piss and moan about it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to figure this into the equation, Ray. We live in the era of the internet where people's voices are heard louder and more
like ours,
explicit than usual. Whereas people would just say, "Well, this year was not as good as last year's." And of course, you say that with TV shows. You watch a TV show and you watch the first season like it's boring, but then you watch the second season like last season was better than this season. You're never satisfied, and even though WrestleMania 30, in my opinion, kicked off without a hitch and was actually a better event than I expected.
It was at the Superdome, not Silverdome.
Hogan. But WrestleMania 31, it's weird because I do agree with you at this point that it was weirdly booked, that you would have thought maybe the best approach would to have been coming up the week before Mania and just having an announcement and saying, folks, we don't have any official matches for this event. We do not know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to take place.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have more intrigue than the card we're seeing right now?
I would think maybe so, but there's a little bit of a variable right there that would change all of that, and that man's name is Sting.
Well, yep, the former crusader of World Championship Wrestling, which went defunct in 2001 when Vince McMahon bought the company from Time Warner and basically ran it into the ground and just saved the filming rights and song rights to it. But yeah, and also, according to storyline, Sting pretty much just sat on his butt for 14 years at home.
Not acknowledging whatsoever his time in TNA, even though...
Or NWA, if we had to go formal with it.
I mean, if anything, I would say that WWE could somehow acknowledge it just a little bit. They don't acknowledge it whatsoever because...
They acknowledge Ring of Honor.
Yeah, because how many guys that were raised in TNA have come to the WWE?
Not many.
You don't see AJ Styles there. You don't see Samoa.
Yeah, he's in Japan now.
You don't see Samoa Joe going there.
Actually, Samoa Joe's going to WWE. He's trying out for NXT.
You're trying out for it, but he's not there yet.
Not yet, no.
Yeah, so how long has TNA been in existence?
Over 10 years.
Yeah, so no wrestler homegrown from TNA has gone over to WWE. WWE stars have gone to TNA and have come back and have, you know, kind of had a lesser role on their second returns. But then again, let's look at the card for WrestleMania. Let's see.
Let's start with the match that's not even listed, and that's the tag team title match, because you know at WrestleMania there's going to be one before the official show starts. I think Tyson Kidd and Cesaro, whoever they face, they're going to keep the titles because that team's been on a roll as of late.
Yeah, and the crowd seems to like them.
I like the cut of their jib. I like the random mixing there. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, though, about their entrance theme, but it's just so much louder than everybody else's, and I kind of have to turn the TV down whenever it comes on.
And I do like Natalya as a heel, too, so that always works.
Okay, so next match.
Randy Orton versus Seth Rollins. This is according to billing here. So Randy Orton versus Seth Rollins. Now, this could be a match that could steal the show early, but I think there will be other matches along the way that may steal its thunder. But yeah, let's look at Randy Orton versus Seth Rollins. This is a match of the old line versus the young line, I guess, in terms of the authority storyline.
The former legend killer versus a legend killer.
Yeah, basically you have an up-and-coming superstar in Seth Rollins. We really can't say up-and-coming anymore because he's pretty much established.
He's there.
He's there. Yeah, he's there now. I mean, he's pretty much on the cut. I'll say this. If he's not world champion by the end of 2015, I'll be surprised.
I mean, he's there considering the fact that he survived a scandal on Twitter where he had lewd photos of himself.
We had to mention that.
And a woman that he may or may not have had an affair with posted on his Twitter page, and it was linked to the WWE.com website. You would think if he can survive that, he's there.
You had to show me that link, Ray. You had to show me that link. That will traumatize me for quite some time.
Sorry, it's news.
All right, now, if you were the booker, how do you book this match? How do you book the ending?
Huh. Do you book it clean? Do you not book it clean?
I think you book it dirty. You have Seth Rollins cheat and beat Randy Orton, but you have Randy Orton beat up Seth Rollins afterwards.
Okay.
I think you do get a redemption in that way. You're still putting over Seth Rollins, but at the same time, you're giving Randy Orton some spotlight as well.
And do you have him involved at a later date when Rollins eventually cashes in his briefcase?
He may cash it in that night.
If he cashes it in that night, does Orton interfere and sabotage it?
No, I think they play it along. But moving on to the next match is the Divas match. For some reason, the title's not on the line. AJ Lee and Paige will be going up against the Bella Twins. Nikki Bella, in my opinion, the better Bella of the two, and Brie Bella.
Well, here's the thing, though, Josh. It's a tag team match, not a singles match. That title is a singles title.
I know, and that's weird because you figure all the titles should be on the line in this event, which almost all of them are.
Of course, what would be cool as a dream booker is that you have AJ and Paige win this match, and then they ultimately say, hey, we should be tag team champions right now.
Yeah, that would be... Oh, yeah, give Divas a chance. I forgot about that trend.
Exactly.
But I don't...
You do it that way, it'd be a good way to say, hey, we need some belts here. I mean, come on. We had fun in that match on WrestleMania.
Maybe if they get all the NXT Divas, such as Sasha Banks and Charlotte Flair there, maybe we can have a conversation. But until then, I see this as a match that, with all due respect and not to add an insult, could be that I got to get a soda break or I got to get food break there. So I think AJ Lee and Paige win that match because you do have to have the good girls win the match at WrestleMania.
At least it's not going to be hopefully not a 10-second match.
No, hopefully it's not a 10-second match. All right, next match on the billing here is Rusev defending his United States Championship and undefeated record against John Cena. Yep, another scenario where the old lion faces the young lion. And I'll tell you what, I didn't like him at first when he first came out, but ever since he had the whole pro-Russia thing, the beautiful valet and Lana, by the way, they are real-life boyfriend and girlfriend, by the way, so they're playing that Randy Savage, Miss Elizabeth thing to a T, but in a heel sense, I like Rusev as a monster heel. He has progressed tremendously and looks legit when you watch him in a match, whereas John Cena is sort of now playing that, and I really don't understand the booking of this. He's playing that veteran that's struggling, even though he came off a match of the year at the Royal Rumble against Brock Lesnar and Seth Rollins. I mean, your thoughts on this, Ray?
I mean, in terms of John Cena, people have been booing him forever, like for the longest time since I could say 06 is when he could really, really, really chronicle the booing that's happened. You're talking almost a decade of being booed as a supposed face of the company. and you have it to where he's going against a monster heel, which, by the way, people were chanting for to win the Royal Rumble in January, if people remember that, because he was hiding underneath the ring the whole time. Everyone's saying, hey, Rusev's still in it. We want him. We want him. Oh, he's getting eliminated. Darn it. Okay, well, whatever. Yeah, Rusev is coming into his own as a monster heel. Could you possibly see a face turn in the future for this guy?
Unless he gets away from Lana, which I hope doesn't happen anytime soon, because I just think the both of them are a terrific pair when they are on television. Not so much Rusev's translator from the Raw before, who just sounded like some guy they picked out of the crowd to do a Russian accent. That was terrible. Don't ever do that again.
Like the guys they randomly pick out of the crowd to be a police officer, or the guys they randomly pick out of the crowd to be a lawyer.
If I was in that crowd, Ray, I would have done a "Where is Lana" chant. In a style of Archer, yeah. I would have done that.
Lana! Danger zone.
Yep. But how do you book this match? How do you book the end of it? Do you let John Cena win the title, or do you give Rusev that moment where he beats the legend?
I would say, and there are rumors that he's going to be having a nice little entrance to WrestleMania,
a communist-style entrance?
Maybe.
Oof.
Well, anyway, I would say that he beats him.
Really? You think no BS, straight up clean win for Rusev?
I would think so, and this is going to tie into later on.
Oh, okay. I see that. So we're going to keep the story going along here.
No, it's going to tie in later on to another match that we're going to be talking about. So what's the next one?
The Undertaker versus Bray Wyatt. Now, if we would have booked last year's Undertaker match differently, this match would be very prolific. But right now, Ray, this seems... This seems complacent.
It seems like you're damned if you do and
damned if you don't.
And damned if you don't, because you don't want The Undertaker to lose again at WrestleMania.
But at the same time, you have this younger superstar in Bray Wyatt who is just a terrific character. He's a terrific, whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, sometimes I don't even know half the time what his message is, because it doesn't seem like he cheats during his matches.
Just follow the buzzards.
Yeah. But you have a young guy in Bray Wyatt who has a great future ahead, and somebody who I've considered to be a champion hopefully in the next 2 years. But The Undertaker, basically, the guy's a legend. I mean, he doesn't need any promotion whatsoever. If you mention The Undertaker, people know who he is. That's how over he is around the world right now.
Now, how about this? Maybe this is how I would book this. Do you make it so shocking to the fact that not only does Bray Wyatt beat him, he beats him in such convincing fashion to where it's not even, you know, that close of a match to where Wyatt just has his way with him and then just beats him senseless into oblivion, then we never hear from him again. That's a possibility.
I think what they probably should have done is have The Undertaker come out in his regular, you know, real-life form and say, hey, kid, look, I'm not wrestling anymore, okay? And just anger him into a match and motivate him. Like Rocky Balboa when he fought Mr. T's character in Rocky III when Mr. T knocked him out in the earlier part of the movie. You just basically had that motivation to come back and be the wrestler you know you can be. But I'll say this. If I'm the booker, I have to put the young line over. I have to give Bray Wyatt the victory. I mean, yes, The Undertaker's great, and we know you can't mention WWE or WrestleMania without The Undertaker, but you give Bray Wyatt an 0-2 record to start his WrestleMania career, that's not a good sign there, Ray.
Nope, but 21-2 also is like, huh, well, thanks for playing, Undertaker. Bye. Yeah. Bye, Felicia. So next match is Sting versus Triple H.
Nope, not yet, not yet.
Really?
The match of the night.
Oh, the Intercontinental title.
Oh, that's right. The 7-man Intercontinental title ladder match. And it's weird. You think 6 is a nice even number, but 7... lucky number 7 wrestlers will be in that match.
When I think of an Intercontinental title ladder match, you know, at WrestleMania, you know what I think of instantly comes to mind?
Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels.
WrestleMania 10.
Razor Ramon holding both titles up. Yep, I remember
yep,
that.
Yep, when they unified them.
Yep, exactly. You have Bad News Barrett, Bray Wyatt. You have Bad News Barrett, the champion, the defending champion, who didn't even have his title for a good amount of weeks. It seemed to be the whole hot potato going on with the contestants in that match, but... yes, Bad News Barrett will be walking into WrestleMania 31 with a title around his waist. He'll be defending it against R-Truth, who, since 2011, has been lost character-wise, but has seemed to have revived his Little Jimmy shtick, where he just seems crazy again.
I think he's on his way out, so...
right.
That he's not winning that.
Against Luke Harper, probably one of the best big man wrestlers in the business and one of the creepiest looking guys in the business, according to your girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yep. You have Dolph Ziggler, who is just a fantastic performer, a guy who, quote, stole the show at Survivor Series last year in the main event.
Yeah, he's not winning it either.
Yeah. You have Stardust, a.k.a. Cody Rhodes, the wild card in this whole thing.
He's not winning it either.
He's not winning. And you have Daniel Bryan. Yup, the same Daniel Bryan that beat Triple H in the opening match at WrestleMania and beat Batista and Randy Orton for the title in the main event at WrestleMania 30. He's in this match for the Intercontinental title.
He's not winning it.
Dean Ambrose, the final contestant, the seventh man, a guy who has not won a pay-per-view event since the Shield pretty much broke up last year, is the seventh contestant and the guy who pretty much started this whole stealing title thing in the first place.
And because you mentioned that, he hasn't won one.
This is it right here. This is it. He's due.
He's got to.
So I think we're pretty much sealing the deal here. You and I agree. Dean Ambrose is walking away with the Intercontinental title. Does he pawn it?
I hope so. Please pawn it. No. Please pawn it.
I hope he pawns it for the Attitude Era Intercontinental title. But nah, I'm just kidding. He's not doing it. But all right, is that match of the night right there?
I would say so.
You say so?
You're going to see so many spots.
Okay, here's the next one. Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Okay, this is just a random pick out of the hat here. Who wins this?
Mizdow.
Curtis Axel. Axel Mania is going to run wild.
He's like, I didn't lose the Battle Royal because I never was eliminated. And yep. I'm going to win that as well.
Never have I seen a guy who's been so low on the card do so much in the last few weeks. Even though he's lost, even though he has anything to show for it, has shown off so much popularity on social media and has pretty much ripped off Hulk Hogan's character with pride and his t-shirt too.
He really needs to come out to the his WCW theme.
Not that theme.
Yes.
It's got to be I'm a Real American. He's got to do that.
Nah.
All right. Now we're in main event territory. Sting versus Triple H.
Sting? Yeah. He's not signing a contract for one match.
So Triple H isn't beating Sting and just giving the big middle finger to all the fans at Levi Stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, but is that a match of the year or is that just a good match? It's just a good solid match.
Well, it all depends.
55-year-old Sting against a 46-year-old Triple H.
Ugh. I mean,
but Triple H was in a good match with Daniel Bryan last year, but then again, Daniel Bryan can have a good match with most guys.
I mean, you're talking both these guys haven't wrestled in singles competition for over a year, so that's going to be... Okay, that is the real question, is it going to be good or not?
Is it going to be good or not? I'm going to say this. On a star scale out of 10, I'll say it'll be a 7.5. It won't be great, but it'll be better than average.
Okay, we can go with that. And next,
the main event.
Yep, last but not least is
the heavily panned, booed main event featuring the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, the Beast Incarnate, Brock Lesnar, accompanied by Paul Heyman, his advocate, will be defending his title against the 2015 Royal Rumble winner and probably the most booed man in Philadelphia, Roman Reigns.
Nah, Santa Claus got booed more.
Santa Claus got booed more? But he got pelted too, didn't he?
Yeah, he got booed more because that was more fans at an actual game event, and this was in an arena, which is a lot smaller.
Now, let me ask you this. Is this match going to be expectedly bad, or is it going to be surprisingly good? Now, I don't think it's going to be a legendary match. I don't think it's going to be one of those matches where we look back from the next 5 years and say, that was probably one of the best matches I ever saw. But I do think we're going to see some surprises in that match. Now, the big question is the contract status of Brock Lesnar. Now, this is a guy who decimated his opponents in his last several matches. Granted, yes, he signed a mega deal with WWE, and it looks like he's on that UFC-style schedule where we only see him for a few months out of the year, but every time we see him, it's a five-star classic.
Yeah, which I don't necessarily mind if his future wasn't as so much up in the air to where he's like, yeah, I only defend my title like once every couple of months at a different pay-per-view, so to speak, which back in the day, it's kind of what it used to be, even though you would have title defenses on Raw or any like house show in between that. But your big, big-time matches came at the big four that WWE had. It was on, what, Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, WrestleMania, and SummerSlam. Those are your big four pay-per-views. You didn't have these monthly pay-per-views in between. So that's the way it used to be. I kind of like this with Brock Lesnar being away from it. But yes, the contract status, the rumors that he's walking out on Raw shows and everything else that's been going on.
UFC is in the mix too. Dana White's been talking to him.
Yeah, but you remember his last UFC stint? He had the diverticulitis and didn't really.
But that was then. That was then, though, Ray.
Yeah, now he seems like he's a lot more healthier, but he's doing this. But here's the thing,
and that was against a roided out Alistair Overeem, too. So
but here's the thing, though, Josh. Yeah. He's a lot more popular now than what he was in his first run with WWE.
He's at his peak right now. Absolutely. He's red
hot. He is a lot more popular now because people are actually cheering this guy on. He's supposed to be this big monster heel, and everyone's cheering him.
And he's legitimately winning matches by the looks of things.
Yeah, and he's not, you know, pulling any punches or doing anything else. His matches are actually quite... You know, are candidates for match of the year, like the Royal Rumble match, and that was also because of Cena and Rollins. But also, his match with The Undertaker was, I mean, it had its moments, but at the end of the day, was actually a decent match.
All right.
And it was shocking, but at the same time, how do you book this?
I think, honestly, with Roman Reigns, this is a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing, because if you let Roman Reigns win, fans are going to boo because it's going to be like last year. Oh, we saw this coming a mile away. Oh, we saw this. Roman Reigns is Vince's boy, blah, 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 blah. Not even thinking of it as a fictional television show. But on the other hand, if Seth Rollins wins his match against Randy Orton, Dean Ambrose wins the ladder match, and Roman Reigns loses the title match against Brock Lesnar, and let's say if he does, it means there's a good chance Brock Lesnar is going to be with the company for another year or two contract-wise, then you're going to have a third Shield member who isn't going to carry an undefeated record at WrestleMania, and that may hurt Reigns. But at the same time, though, Ray, it may back fans off. It may back fans and critics off of Reigns and say, okay, maybe we'll cheer this guy on as he goes for the title, and maybe when he wins that title, it'll be the right moment.
Yeah, I could see that happening as the way of saying, you know what, we had you picked as the guy, but apparently nobody else wants you to be the guy, so. Let's do it this way. You're going to be the guy, even though you want to put some stock in the upper management telling you that. At the same time, you want to say, how about this? We have you lose at WrestleMania this way. Rollins cashes in on the Money in the Bank after you just knocked out Lesnar, and maybe possibly a Roman Reigns heel turn?
Yeah, and going back to the critics here before we close this segment out, some critics are great, some are good, some are average, and some are bad. Wrestling does have good critics, but some of them are very bad. And the only way I hope Roman Reigns wins this is that it pisses off the bad critics, which is never a bad thing in professional wrestling.
Never a bad thing is our two-minute rant. Josh, you go first this week.
Since we were talking about professional wrestling, and it seems like we're closing a show out on that very subject, one video that I've watched this past week on YouTube, the infamous video website. Yeah, we all know what YouTube is. I know, whatever. I'll move on. Anyway, there's this young aspiring writer in Hollywood by the name of Max Landis. You may know him by his father, John Landis, who directed some very good movies in the 80s and 90s. But anyway, Max Landis also wrote the movie Chronicle, so he does have some pub to his name. Anyway, moving on, how does this relate to professional wrestling? Well, Max Landis came out with an experimental near half-hour video revolving around the fictitious world of professional wrestling and how people criticize it as fake, where people say, you do know it's fake, right? Where Landis replies, not as fake as any TV show you watch on television, where he brings up a wrestler by the name of Hunter Hearst Helmsley, a.k.a. Triple H, who exists in real life. Anyway, he pretty much fictionizes this whole thing with female actors, where they play the male counterparts and play the male roles. Pretty much what Landis is implying here is that Triple H is not so much a backstabbing political guy in the scene, in the back of the scenes of things in professional wrestling, but more so a character that has evolved in a near 20-year span that people should focus on more than what they read in the tabloids and what they read on online dirt sheets. And I think this was a good thing for Max Landis, and I think this is a good thing for professional wrestling and professional wrestling in mainstream and television. We forget that professional wrestling is a fictitious television show. Yes, real-life people are playing in the roles. Yes, they are playing in physical combat. But at the same time, we need to remember to take the backstage politics out of it and realize it is a television show that is entertaining.
My two-minute rant also going to be about professional wrestling to a point, but this one is about a little bit of a tragedy that took place over this past weekend. It was Rey Mysterio Jr. in a tag match against Perro Aguayo Jr. I'm not even going to pretend to think that I've heard of this guy even before this incident happened, because my exposure to luchador wrestling and Mexican wrestling is with WCW, the first hour of Nitro with the Cruiserweight division, and occasionally with the WWE and Rey Mysterio Jr., and here and there a little bit of stereotypes with masks that you see in video games everywhere, so to speak. I'm not going to pretend that I've heard of Perro Aguayo Jr., but I am reading about this guy. I'm finding out about this guy. I'm looking at this guy and saying, huh, if I was actually exposed to this type of professional wrestling as opposed to living in the United States of America and seeing WWE on my television every Monday, I probably would have gotten behind this guy and would have liked this guy, because he's that heel character that you like. He's the kind of guy that says, hey, I'm dominant, I'm this guy, you better, larger than life is what wrestling's all about. Well, unfortunately, he suffered an in-ring accident when he took a dropkick from Rey Mysterio Jr., not what killed him. He also hit the ring ropes, possibly what killed him, or maybe it was his partner coming down and causing whiplash to his neck, which also possibly killed him. It was a freak accident. People are sending Rey Mysterio death threats. People are also saying in headlines, Rey Mysterio killed a guy. No, Rey Mysterio did not kill a guy. Perro Aguayo Jr. died of a freak accident in the ring of something that has happened over 1,000 times with Mysterio's 619 finisher maneuver. If anything, it was just a freak accident, and maybe the way that it was handled after the fact was, but I like to see you in that situation where you think somebody is seriously, seriously injured, see how you would react, and find out what exactly was going on, and see if you would keep your composure. I'm not so sure, but Perro Aguayo Jr., find out more about this guy. Don't look at the headlines.
I totally agree with you 100% there. And yeah, to close the show out, though, we want to send condolences to the family of Perro Aguayo Jr., because 35 is a terrible age for anybody to go out and leave this world early. And also send condolences to the family, friends, and Philadelphia Eagles fans of the legendary Chuck Bednarik, who passed away this past weekend, the last 60-minute man to play in the National Football League, and correct me if I'm wrong, probably one of the few remaining players from the Philadelphia Eagles' last World Championship team in 1960. Yeah, it's incredible stuff, though.
Condolences as well. Josh, yep. We got something to announce, right?
Yep, that's right. Starting next week, we're going to be announcing details on how you, the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All listener, every month of this upcoming spring, summer, and beginning of fall, can win pairs of Oriole tickets to regular season games. That's right, at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. We will have more details for you coming up next week. I know we're keeping it short and sweet because, hey, we're like the Christmas story. We're not telling you to drink your Ovaltine in the end, so you got to listen to the show. You got to stay tuned. And we hope you enjoyed this week's edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Until next week, I'm Marie Atkinson.
I'm Josh Hall.
And we will see you all.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.